You're listening to American Girl Women with Laura Treader and Lindsay Adams-Franca. This is a podcast where two millennial gals gather around the microphone and reminisce on the cultural phenomenon that took our childhood by storm, American Girl dolls. Contrary to what you might think, we aren't just talking about dolls here. We're diving into the high highs and the low lows of getting hooked on American Girl and all the childhood memories that come flooding back. So join us and a few special guests each week as we become American Girl women.
Today on American Girl Women, we are joined by Erin Donahue, a New York-based freelance writer who recently helped launch East Wing Magazine, an online publication that explores the stories of America's first ladies, past and present, from a feminist perspective. Erin's past experience includes working as a local news reporter in the D.C. area, as well as a national reporter for CBSNews.com, covering criminal and social justice. She has also had her work published in Smithsonian Magazine. Growing up in Connecticut, Erin loved reading and always knew she wanted to be a writer. She even had her first story published in American Girl magazine, winning a writing contest for her story, The Girl Who Became a Ghost, featured in the July-August 1994 issue. We are thrilled to have her join us today to hear all about her experience with American Girl. Erin, welcome to AGW.
Hi, I'm so excited to be here and talk with you guys about American Girl.
We're so excited to have you, and I feel like Lindsay and I have been buzzing with excitement over getting you on the podcast, and I think that our listeners are going to be buzzing as well, because we posted a story a while back that you had submitted to American Girl magazine as a young girl, and the responses in our comment section were insane. Everybody connected with this story on some level. And we feel so lucky that we get to hear all about it directly from you.
It's really amazing to see how much response the story has gotten, especially since it was so long ago that it was published. And I read a lot of those comments, and it's just really, I just feel super honored that people resonated that much with the story.
Totally. I like can't recall another story that we've posted that like immediately the comments were rolling in saying that it was a core memory from them. Like they loved it. They remembered it. It terrified them. They were inspired. It ignited their imagination. Like we had such like strong reactions from our community, and it was so incredible to see. And we had several requests to have the author on our podcast. And I am just so thrilled to first reach out to the correct Erin. We had some sleuths in our comment section. I don't know if you saw that, but we're just so thrilled that you responded to our email and we're having this conversation today. So thank you so much, Erin, for joining us tonight.
So happy to be here.
Well, before we get into the story, to set the stage a bit, Erin, what were you like growing up?
So I was an only child. So I spent a lot of time by myself, just sort of in my own weird little world, like doing a lot of reading, doing a lot of writing. I was super obsessed with The Little Mermaid for a long time with my good friend, Amy. We would like reenact The Little Mermaid, basically the whole plot of the movie in her backyard and like fight over who had to be Ariel and who had to be Sebastian the crab. But yeah, I think that was, as I started to get a little bit older, I was really into scary stories, spook culture. I watched a lot of like, you know, Are You Afraid of the Dark on Nickelodeon. I read Scary Stories to Be Told in the Dark. I was into a lot of pretty dark YA thrillers when I was a kid. So yeah, I really just kind of was interested, I think, in almost like immersing myself in different worlds. Especially if they were spooky or weird, that just really appealed to me.
Right? I'm right there with you. We talked about this before we hit record, but like the 90s were just such a prime time for like getting scared. It's something that has carried with me throughout my life. Like I love ghost stories. Like right now, the Jezebel Scary Story Contest is happening, which I look forward to every year.
Amazing.
But yeah, these like early like memories of connecting with something that was like supernatural or like kind of like these elements that were being introduced to something that was otherworldly were just so appealing.
Definitely. And I think also just the, I was interested in sort of the heroine. There was always a heroine usually at the center of these stories. So it was really fascinating to me to read about, you know, girls who are my age who are having these crazy experiences with ghosts or ESP or whatever else. Yeah, it was just, I could not get enough of it.
Right? That's a good point. Like, Are You Afraid of the Dark really centered on like young like kids or teens, like really put them at the center of these ghost stories? Do you
Yeah.
like remember any of the Are You Afraid of the Dark stories that you were particularly drawn to?
Yeah, I remember there was a story about this radio station, and it everybody's like, where is this radio station being broadcast from? There's just like this weird, like old-timey music on it. And then it turns out it's like coming from the cemetery, and like a dead guy is like broadcasting the radio station from like beyond the grave. It's just
Oh my God,
very
is this the one with Gilbert Gottfried and
possibly,
Ryan
yes.
Gosling?
Possibly. I can't remember, but maybe I'll have to look
Oh
it
my gosh. I
up.
was like never brave enough to watch Are You Afraid of the Dark regularly. I remember every time it would come on, I'd like take it a little further. Like I'd watch like just like the first few seconds of the intro, then I'd watch like the whole intro. But I remember one episode, which was probably one of the only ones I ever watched, had something to do with like a carousel and like the horse, one of the horses on the carousel's eye was like this blue like orb, and I feel like somehow it connected back to like colonial times. Like
Ooh. Gosh.
I need to look it up because I wish I remembered more, but I remember being very scared. But I do think that in our middle childhood, when we were probably like in middle or elementary school, books about scary things seemed so much more manageable than like watching scary things, I think, for some of us. And
For
I
sure.
definitely gravitated towards like reading scary stories way more than watching them. So I feel like, you know, any kind of reading material that had like a spooky flair was like a great entry point to that if you weren't quite ready to like watch a scary movie or show.
Sure. Yeah, and definitely like some of those early novels had the illustrations too. So it's almost like you got even a little bit more freaked out imagining it yourself with the help of these very vivid illustrations.
Right.
Yes.
Oh
Yeah,
my
like some of the stories
goodness.
to be told in the dark had just those sort of notoriously freaky illustrations.
They're so creepy. Like even looking at
Yeah.
them today, they like ooh, immediate fear. But like
Totally.
I love how like there was just like kind of like levels of like introductory ghost stories. Like the girl with the green ribbon isn't that
Yes.
scary, but like when I read it when I was 6 or 7, I was like, oh my God, this is terrifying. Like it was just like, you know, kind of dipping your toe into that world.
Yeah. I think that even just a year or two makes a big difference at that age
Right.
of like your scare level.
Seriously.
It always blows my mind like how many like just like common scary stories there are that like kids read in school too. Like Sleepy Hollow, I used to find to be quite scary. Even A Christmas Carol is kind of scary, to be honest.
For sure.
Ooh, I haven't thought of that in a scary way, but it kind of is.
Lindsay, you haven't thought about the story of a man who's visited by four different ghosts, one of whom is just like a grim reaper. Like, was
You
not
know
scary to you?
what? I feel like whenever I think about it, I think of the Muppet version. So, like, objectively not scary.
That's true. I think it depends on like what version you the visuals matter there for sure. And sometimes I
Right.
think like if you're young enough, you don't even know enough to be scared like of certain things too.
For
Sure.
definitely.
The illustrations were one like super cool thing about the story that I had published and like how cool it was to be a kid at that age and sort of see your story kind of like come to life with this very beautiful yet dark illustration.
Yeah.
And it was amazing, still like blows my mind to this day that they like took so much time and care and effort that they put into bringing the story to life. Yeah.
Oh my God, truly. Well, let's get into it. So, for those unfamiliar with your story, Erin had a story published in American Girl magazine called The Girl Who Became a Ghost. And we will actually be playing a recording of it after our conversation. So, please stay tuned until the very end. But, Erin, This was a writing contest that American Girl had where they gave a prompt earlier in the year to start off the stories with that I have here. It was, Jamie had warned her 1,000 times, but she never listened. So you could kind of take this in any direction that you want. And from what we've seen with the other contest winners, different directions were taken. But could you tell us a bit about the contest from your perspective?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think at that time in my life, I had been writing a lot of short stories. And my dad had, you know, just kind of gotten the magazine one day from the mail and showed it to me and noticed that they were, you know, having a call out for short story contests. And I was like, okay, awesome. And I, according to my dad, went up to my room and wrote the story in like an hour and a half, and which is kind of weird to me looking back on it. But he said, he asked me later, like what the hardest part of the writing the story was. And apparently I said something like coming up with the name of the character. And he was like, who cares about that? Like, that's lame. But yeah, I think I just did it kind of on a whim, submitted it because I don't know, it just seemed like it would be, I think, something that you would sort of dream would happen, but you never think will actually happen. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Yeah. So I think there were a few rounds. Like there was, you know, a finalist round where they got in touch with me and they were like, you're a finalist, you know, you're, I think, one of 20. And I don't remember the phone call, but I remember like hanging up the phone, like my parents, like beige, like rotary dial, like wall mounted, like phone, like hanging it up and just like losing my mind. And, like, I was like being so excited.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
When you were writing the story, were you like, did you submit like a handwritten copy?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's what my dad said. I don't remember, but yeah, apparently I did.
It's just kind of crazy to think about that now,
it is,
right?
It's totally crazy, especially as a writer and everything I do is on the computer. I can't imagine doing something handwritten at all.
Right, totally. Do you, so knowing that like you wrote this in a fairly short time, like, do you think that you had this idea bubbling up inside of you previously? Like, have you written scary stories before this?
Yeah, I had definitely written a lot of scary stories and was also, I'm sure, reading a ton of scary stories as well. So I'm sure it came from somewhere that I was either writing or reading at the time. Yeah. It kind of like blended together. Yeah.
Totally. And just for a little background for our listeners before they hear it later on in the episode, but can you give a brief synopsis of the story?
Sure. So it starts off with a girl named Lydia, and the warning is given to her by her brother Jamie that she shouldn't go to this place called Dead Man's Creek because he thinks it's haunted, but she doesn't listen. So she's kind of in this sort of ritual of going to this creek every day, and she comes across this girl who is, we find out later, a ghost. Eventually what happens is the ghost girl kills the real girl. And it happens in sort of an unexpected way because the heroine, the protagonist, is like actually attempting to save her from this creek, which is how this girl died in real life, as she drowned. So she was trying to save her and wound up being killed by her. So obviously pretty dark.
It honestly was truly so well written and had so many layers and was just, I feel like it just really captured my attention and imagination. And I agree with everyone who commented, like, it really is a core memory, like, and especially to have this written by a peer, it was just really incredible to kind of experience this ghost story. I feel like it should be a classic.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much. That's so nice of you to say. I really appreciate that.
I feel like one of the things that makes it so compelling, especially at a young age, is that like the ghost character, I feel like, is not like, you know, she ends up killing like our main character in a way that it's like she couldn't be trusted the whole time. Like, I feel like it really like messes as a kid with like your sense of like justice and like trust. Like, I don't know, I think that that's like one of the reasons why for me I was like, this is like gonna shake me to my core because it's so unexpected, I feel like.
Right. I think also like I can understand how scary it would have been coming in American Girl magazine, which clearly is not a place where you would expect to have a story like that published. I don't see
So,
why it would have come out of left field for a lot of people, you know?
right. So after you submitted the story and got through to the final rounds, and they finally made the call to tell you that, your story was picked, what were next steps? Did they tell you when it was going to be put in the magazine? And did they tell you they were going to do illustrations as well?
The illustrations were a surprise, at least to me. I'm not sure if they told my parents that, but I don't know the exact time frame, but my mom said it was a pretty long lead time between the time they told me I was a winner and the time it was published. She said it was about 6 months. Yeah, I think I just remember being just so excited. Apparently I got a letter and from them, and I was like waiting on the front stoop with my letter, like waiting for my mom to come home so I could tell her that I won. I was like so crazy excited.
Wow, that's so sweet. And what was it like seeing the actual issue?
It was incredible. I think for anyone really, it's kind of a really special moment for a writer when you kind of see your byline imprint for the first time. But for me to have that experience like at 11 was just like next level. It was just like overwhelming. Like if I'd eaten like 20 candy bars and had like a huge sugar rush, it was like that type of feeling.
Oh my goodness. I bet that's incredible.
Were your friends aware? Like, did you share with your friends that you had been published? Did any of them like get to read the story in real time, as the magazine came out? Was this something like you talked about at school?
That's a really good question, and I unfortunately don't really remember that. I do remember that shortly after this happened, so maybe like a year later, I moved to a completely new town where I like didn't know anyone, and this girl like approached me and she was like, "Oh my God, like you're the girl that wrote that story in American Girl magazine." I was like, "Oh my God,
Oh my
I am."
God.
And we became friends after that, so that was really cool.
That's
Yeah.
awesome. Wait, that is so impressive because I always felt like the American Girl was putting people way too much on blast in the magazine with like their first, last name, and town and age. But in this case, it kind of worked out
It worked out.
because
Yeah.
she was
'Cause it
able
was
to,
just the next name. Yeah.
she
I
was able to piece
know.
it together.
Oh my God. Erin, I bet people are still talking about this story. Like, we get comments all the time on our Instagram being like, I went to school with someone who was a paper doll. Like, I am sure your name is being like discussed every once in a while, like all these years later. It's like knowing a celeb.
That's funny. I don't feel like that at all. It's funny because it was like it happened so long ago and I just completely forgot about it. Maybe there was definitely like it was a huge deal at the time, but I feel like it was mostly like for me, it felt internal to my family. Like, my grandmother freaked out and like bought all the copies in the West Palm Beach Barnes and Noble, whatever. But like, you know what I mean? But it didn't feel like it had like much of an impact beyond that. But then 5 years ago, I was just sitting at my desk at my job where I was working at CBS News as a reporter, and I get a call, and it's this woman, Sarah Bridgens, who's a writer as well. And she was like, "Are you the same Erin Donahue that wrote The Girl Who Became a Ghost in American Girl magazine?" And I was like, "Yes, I am." And it was just funny because the newsroom is kind of like open and like everybody is kind of like everybody can hear everything that's going on. So I'm sure that everybody around me was like, "What kind of conversation is happening right now?" But it was great because I got to connect with Sarah and she wanted to write an essay about the story's impact on her and just also sort of tying it into me and how I worked as a crime reporter now. I'm not doing that anymore. I'm a freelancer now, but anyway, I don't think that essay ever panned out, but what was cool was that me and Sarah definitely got to connect and talk about American Girl and talk about the magazine and how it sort of impacted both of our lives. And we talked a lot about, how it was really sort of a feminist sort of publication at the time when you didn't have a lot of that going on at all. So it was for both of us, I think, pretty influential. So yeah, so that was really cool.
Absolutely. And just out of curiosity, because this is probably like something that most of us don't think about very often because the stories that we wrote in elementary school don't get published. But did you remember still to this day, like every detail of that story, or did you have to kind of, do you like have to revisit it from time to time, or like has it stuck with you as well, like all the plot points and characters and details?
Yeah, it really didn't stick with, I mean, I would have to make like a concerted effort to go back and like reread it. Like I reread it before the show and everything, but if I'm not prompted, it just sort of goes into like the goop of everything else in my brain, basically. Yeah.
Yeah, like it's like, well, I think probably like how a lot of people felt, like who were resonating it with it in our comments, was like maybe they didn't remember like every single detail about it, but they remembered how it made them feel, so they had such a
Oh
strong reaction to it. But yeah, I was just curious about that because, like, you know, obviously I don't remember every piece of writing I've ever created, you know, from childhood, but you know, for something like this that like had such an impact, yeah, I was just curious if you sort of kept it always in the back of your mind, but totally understandable, especially as a career writer, why that wouldn't be the case.
Yeah, I think there's sometimes just with other things that I write and I come across it 5 years later and I have no recollection of writing it at all. It's just too, like it's funny how like when you're a writer, you're just like putting out so much stuff and you have really sometimes no concept at all of like where it's gonna land or what the, you know, what the response is gonna be at all. Most of the time it's nothing. So that's why when it does happen, it's like very surprising.
Right. And now, Aaron, from this story, there was a bit of aftermath that ensued from
Yes.
readers and parents that felt that this story was a bit too scary and a departure from the more typical American Girl magazine content. And there was even a response in the letters from you section of the magazine. Was it the following month, perhaps, or soon after? Were you
Yeah.
aware that there had to be like a statement issued or anything from the magazine?
Yeah, I only knew sort of what anybody else reading the magazine would know, and that I read that. I guess it's a kind of an apology sort. Well, it was a letter from a girl who was upset that the story was too scary, and she felt like she wanted to, you know, come to American Girl for like laughs and not scares, which, you know, totally fair, like understandable. And the magazine published sort of a response to it, and it was very thoughtful, and it said something along the lines of like that shows the power of a story. And I think that that was a great response. But I think at the time I felt like I'd done something wrong. Like, and now looking back, I'm like, oh my gosh, like if I could, me, adult journalist me could like have a little like mentor session with like kid writer me, like that would be great. But like, I really was like upset.
Yeah, fair.
The only thing that you did wrong was slay too hard on
Thank you.
the
No,
story writing.
it's so
Seriously.
funny. Like I have so many mixed emotions about it, honestly, because it's so like awesome that it had this impact, and that's obviously what like what a good story does. It has that type of impact and resonance with people. But at the same time, I really do honestly feel bad that very young girls were very scared by this, and like to the point where it still affects them today. Like that, I like don't feel great about that either.
I feel like it's almost like a rite of passage to be really scared by something like in the spooky realm as a kid. Just like the Are You Afraid of the Dark episode that I'm gonna have to look up after this because now it's gonna bother me that I don't remember it. But I think I do kind of like find it funny that they had to like formulate a whole PR response, and Lindsay works in PR, so I'm like, Lindsay, you would have been the person at American Girl magazine trying to figure out how to respond to
Oh my
that
goodness. And you know, it's interesting because there was another story published in the contest as a winner that was focused on witches. Like there was a
letter.
witch story as well, but that was like not to the extent whatsoever. Like that would have like that impact, I would imagine. It was more I don't know, a circumstantial witch, but Erin, you were actually, Sarah had connected with one of the founding editors of American Girl magazine, Nancy Holyoake, who vividly remembered publishing your story and shared some insight into the magazine at the time. Were you surprised to hear Nancy's reaction and that she still remembered your winning entry?
Yes, very, very much so. I think it was also really interesting because so I connected with her as well as Sarah, and I got to hear sort of more of her perspective about what was happening behind the scenes when she was publishing the story and how she didn't really think much of publishing the story. She just thought it was a good story, I'm going to publish it, and which is I'm so grateful that she did, but I don't think she was anticipating the fallout that came back. And it was interesting to hear some details about that, that I like literally had no idea was happening as a kid. And now, you know, as an adult, literally like a week ago, I'm like finding out what was going on. So it was interesting. she was saying like, yeah, we didn't get a ton of negative complaints, but we got a few and they were very angry. And they were like, cancel my subscription, angry. And that, you know, some of the pushback was from just, you know, people who didn't want their kids exposed to such a sort of dark world when they sort of entrusted American Girl with, you know, providing their daughters with this very sort of curated, safe, like positive world, which fair, you know, I understand that. And then she said a small portion of the pushback was also from conservative Christian parents who were sort of a big part of the subscriber base. And she said something along the lines of like, you know, the people that are banning, trying to ban books now would have been among those people who were upset. I think the religious complaint was that ghosts and witches were seen as sacrilegious or irreligious mm-hmm. at the time. And that was what, you know, a portion of the complaints were as well. So yeah, she was kind of like, yeah, I don't regret publishing it, but it certainly rocked the boat. And I think she was thinking at the time, she was just coming over from New York, working in adult literary magazines. She was kind of saying like, people would understand that this is a ghost story. And that was what I was thinking as well, that people would just think, oh, this is a ghost story. It's not real, you know, but
right.
I think she said she didn't fully understand like how involved parents are with the type of content that they want their kids exposed to and sort of like the level of pushback there would be essentially.
Yeah. I would love to read a bit of a quote that she included, because I think she really captured exactly what I was kind of trying to express earlier about like why the story I feel like is just so spooky. Mm-hmm. But she talks about how it wasn't the type of story that readers expected to see in American Girl magazine. And that was precisely what she liked about it. Mm-hmm. But her exact words were, the narrator is undone by her own empathy and heroism. And I feel like that is like so like real and like very astute. And then, you know, she goes on to say like that's why it deserved to be published, because it was so unique. But I love that that Nancy's sticking by her guns. I love that she's kind of like, sorry for those people who didn't get it, but you know, everyone's entitled to their opinion, basically, right. is what she's saying.
Right. And I mean, it's such like, it's the antithesis of a typical American Girl story that like the brand is really built on, with the historic characters of, you know, sharing that like being a friend, like having like doing good deeds will get you far. Like it's kind of flipping that entirely from what we've seen from the brand. So it's really, I mean, it's so interesting. And I mean, it's objectively like a great piece of writing. I think it's just really remarkable that you wrote this at such a young age. And I just love that the editors at American Girl and Pleasant really saw the complexity of it to publish this, like, despite it being like not in line necessarily with like their brand and like what was considered like a typical American Girl story.
Yeah, for sure. And it was really interesting that Nancy Holyoake said that Pleasant herself signed off on it, which apparently she did with everything in the magazine, at least, you know,
before, yeah,
when she was still involved with it before she sold it. And you know, Nancy was talking about Pleasant as kind of like this sort of fierce defender of the brand. And like, it was, you know, it's her brand. And it would, I would imagine that if anything would have raised alarm bells about it, or if she would have anticipated some crazy pushback, that she wouldn't have signed off on it. So I'm not sure, you know, but it, but I'm so grateful to her and Nancy that they published it. And it was amazing to hear Nancy say that she doesn't, you know, regret it, and that she thinks it was worthy of being published. So definitely really cool to have that happen. It was just one of those kind of crazy things.
Yeah. And Nancy seems like a hoot. I'd love to get a drink
yeah.
with her.
It was so interesting to chat with her after all this. I mean, I'd never talked to her in person before, but to talk to her as an adult and hear her perspective was really fascinating.
Definitely. And now, aside from the magazine, were you also interested in other elements of American Girl as well? Like, did you ever get into the books or the dolls?
Yeah, I was to a certain extent. I wasn't super into the dolls, although I did have Felicity, but I really wanted Molly secretly, but my best friend Amy at the time had Molly. And I felt like I, you know, if Amy has Molly, I need to get something different. It was just like one of those weird, like, she was probably like the closest thing I had to a sister since I was an only child, and she was my babysitter's daughter and we grew up together. So it was just kind of funny to think about that, about, you know, I think probably what attracted me both to Molly and to Felicity were sort of the spunkiness. You would always hear that about those two characters, that they were very spunky and sort of feisty and just sort of not willing to, you know, go about life the way they were told, which, you know, I think that's definitely a great message to hear as a young kid.
Absolutely. And now, were you playing American Girls together, or was it more of something that you sort of each had your own American Girl, but you weren't really like playing with them as like a group? It was more of like a solo thing.
It was more of a solo thing. I mean, you know, we showed them off to each other and stuff, but I wouldn't say we had like whole like play sessions or anything.
Yeah, but I think we've kind of discovered through this podcast that there were like sort of a Venn diagram of different ways that people played with their American girls, and some preferred to play with others. Others preferred to play solo. Some were really chaotic with the mixing and matching of historical outfits. Some were very true to the historic periods. So it's just always interesting to hear like what people's unique playing experience was with American Girl, because it's kind of like different for everybody, but there's like a spectrum of like organized to chaos essentially.
Truly. Did you get into like collecting different outfits for Felicity? Like, were you like circling everything in the catalog?
I would say that the catalog was definitely just this beautiful like world that I think it was kind of like anything else, like with my books or whatever that I was reading, that like it sort of evoked this sort of like mood or like vibe or whatever, and you just sort of wanted to live there, right? So like I think like a lot of other girls, I spent a lot of time like looking through the catalog and wanting things in the catalog that I like could never get, but like definitely, you know, picking out things that I would have wanted. Like I remember like Felicity's like canopy bed. That was for whatever reason, I think I wanted a canopy bed for myself because something about them just seems very like romantic and magical. And then
totally
seeing like Felicity's canopy bed, I was like, I need that. But then, no.
I don't know about you guys, but when I was a kid, I, number one, absolutely was into like any kind of canopy bed situation. Mm-hmm. But what I fantasized about doing was like closing all the curtains and like being in my own little world in there. And that was like why I wanted the canopy bed. And it's honestly, it's such a good idea, because it's like, like who wouldn't want to like have a little curtain like situation around their bed, so they're just like all kind of like tucked in there, and like then you don't have to have like the sun like shining on you in the morning. Like why didn't we keep canopy beds around?
I know. And also sometimes with that gauze or whatever, it can just look so beautiful and mysterious.
Remember those vividly. I had one of those and I feel like it like fell on me a couple times in the middle of the night, because like our house was really old, so the ceiling was like kind of like crumbly. Like, and I
Oh,
remember like
man.
just several times like waking up to like the like big wooden
Oh
hoop on top of me. And
my
I was like 10, and I'm like, that probably would have like scared the crap out of me now. But at the time I was like, oh no. And I would just hang it up again.
Worth it, worth it. Oh
But
my God.
I feel like American Girl, like the catalog was aspirational in that way. Like things like Felicity's bed or like her Christmas dress or even like her horse, like just resonated with a lot of people just by looking at them, even if you couldn't have them.
Definitely. Yeah. And I think also like later when I was a kid, catalogs aren't even a thing anymore, obviously, but there were specific brands of catalogs, like Delia's was a big one when I was like a young teen. And it was the same type of thing. It would like evoke this world and you just wanted to be there and therefore you wanted to buy all this shit. You know what I mean? So it was the same thing with American Girl.
I really like that. I haven't really considered that, like looking through a magazine is like such like a vibe and atmosphere. Like
Yeah.
I do a lot of eBay browsing for old catalogs from the late 90s, early
Oh,
2000s,
that's cool.
and like anytime I get them, it just instantly like transports me back to this time. But like thinking back to the original time that I was looking at them, even that like would bring me to a place. Like I loved getting lost in a catalog, and American Girl did that so well.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, I love your guys' Instagram account where you're posting a lot of the old catalog pages because it's definitely like a amazing nostalgia boost. But it's also you can see how carefully they curated everything, like for a doll. Like it's crazy. It's not even for a person, it's for a doll. It's amazing.
Yes, I know. And there was like always that very like initial excitement, like when you'd get something, like and being like, okay, like I'm gonna set up like this bed for my doll. But then you'd be like, oh, but I don't have the entire like backdrop that is in the magazine. So it's actually like not really giving the same vibe,
Yeah, you're never,
but.
yeah, it's funny. That's another thing with that is that you're never actually reaching this vibe on your own. Like you're always sort of like striving for it, but you're never actually getting there. And that's like part of the whole like consumerism thing, right? But it's still like
Truly.
beautiful and nostalgic in a
Oh my
way.
God,
Truly.
that's so true.
I think maturity is realizing that looking at the catalog was almost more impactful than getting
Totally.
anything from it.
Totally. I would read that right now. Like if somebody gave that to me, I would just like have that, like read that with my coffee in the morning.
Yeah, cover to cover. If I like the new catalogs don't hit the same as the old ones, but like, I mean, Lindsay and I, when before we even started this podcast, just spent hours and hours over the period of several weeks, just like combing through a catalog together and like noticing different things about it. And it's like crazy how much you forget, but also how many weird things you have kept in your brain all these years. With American Girl and other catalogs, like an old Pottery Barn teen catalog will do the same thing to me,
Sure.
that
You
American Girl
remember.
does. Yeah.
Well, the descriptions in American Girl, for me, that was like as good as a book, like reading through
Definitely.
like every detail of the accessories and clothing items. Like it made such an impact. And we've chatted about this on the podcast before, but the fact that there was just ever so slightly like variance in the catalogs, like everything was pretty much the same, like from each catalog issue to the next. And so it like really made that impact, I think, just being so consistent. And like it was fun to see like what items, you know, were new, mostly with like the new characters that were being added or like the modern dolls with American Girl of today. But like the original like four or five dolls like had the same catalog like photo, like editorial shoot. Like it just remains so consistent from like when they launched until like the late
A
90s,
while. Yeah.
you
Yeah. I would
know?
be curious to know if, like, from a sort of marketing psychological standpoint, like if that had an impact on our collective memory of how, just like looking at the same catalog over and over again for years.
I know. Well, it's kind of interesting because Lindsay and I were into American Girl at somewhat different times. And I probably closed out my American Girl era in like 2003 or 2002. And so much of the things that I was looking at were actually the same as what Lindsay had been looking at because they kept so much of the same imagery, especially like for the historic dolls. And I kind of love that. Like the Girl of Today stuff was always sort of rotating, but I loved that like the historic dolls were basically consistent from like 1986 to 2004, I feel like, or you know, they'd add a new historic doll once in a while, but even the new ones were formatted in the same way. It's like there's the bedroom and the birthday and the winter. And those descriptions that they had, like if you think about it, even if you were, you know, really into the books, usually I feel like you're sort of getting exposed to the character first. And then maybe like feeling enticed to read the book. So like they have to make those descriptions like make you want to read the books. So there are like mini like stories almost. And I feel like they tie them into the books really well. Like if you really went through and fact checked all those descriptions with like the book plots, like they line up. Like they did not spare any detail there.
Totally.
Yeah. I'd be curious to know what the editorial process is like with all that.
I literally wish that I could just like see their whole process from start to finish for the catalog and the magazine because so many people were involved, and yet like I feel like the like there was not one detail out of place, which is pretty impressive. But yeah, I don't know. It's just really, really incredible. I want to know more. I want to know about the photo shoot process as well.
Yeah, that sounds really cool.
Seriously. Now, Erin, going back to kind of your career a bit, could you tell us a little bit more about the journey you had from writing as a child to, pursuing this as a career?
Sure. Yeah, so I would say that I pretty much always knew I wanted to be a writer. So from around age 7, I knew that's what I wanted to do. I was pretty laser focused on it, but I think the, you know, story being published in American Girl certainly helped with that, just like the confidence level of it. But there were other elements. You know, I had like a really supportive like network, family, and teachers, that type of thing. But I would say in some way I knew that I wanted to pursue writing like throughout my whole young-ish life, and I wound up going to college for journalism. Or, well, I guess technically it was called writing literature and publishing was the major. And then I went back to grad school for journalism. And I think, you know, it's interesting. I sort of went from fiction to nonfiction, just assuming that that was the way I needed to go to make money as a writer in the world, which, you know, yes and no, knowing what I know now. But that's sort of the direction I was just decided to go in. And looking back now, I wonder if maybe I should have pursued more of a creative writing trajectory. But you know, honestly, I'm just like grateful that I'm able to write professionally. I mean, it's super cool. So I was in local news in DC for a few years after I graduated grad school, and then I moved up to New York City and I was a national reporter for CBS News, covering criminal social justice. And then about 2 years ago, I went freelance, and it's been a really fun transition because I've been able to like sort of branch out all over the place with my writing, and I've done like astrology and all sorts of weird stuff. But one cool thing I did recently was I helped my good friend and colleague Jen Taylor launch East Wing Magazine. So that's a new digital publication, and it's basically exploring the stories of America's first ladies from more of a feminist perspective. And we're really kind of like trying to tap into the researchers who are looking at the historical narrative and trying to sort of look at where these women sort of got a bad rap and trying to, you know, show more of how they played a role from a powerful standpoint as opposed to sort of more of a background ceremonial role. And it really does kind of map onto women's history and feminism and sort of writ large. So it's been really fascinating. I launched that with her, let's say in August. So it's just been a couple months. We're still getting started, but there's definitely some tie-ins there to American Girl. There's like the historical tie-in and there's the just sort of feminist tie-in, I'd say. It was actually really fascinating for me to hear Nancy Holyoake say that, you know, that no one at the magazine considered it to be feminist or they didn't talk about it in that kind of way. So I was like, huh. She was like, we talked about it in terms of empowering girls. So like having girls do unexpected things like riding in rodeos and being, you know, beekeeping, whatever.
Right.
To me, I guess that is feminism, but it might just be like semantics, but it was sort of encouraging girls to sort of take on really any kind of adventure or career trajectory, like crazy idea, whatever, sort of like encouraging them to like push their boundaries, which I thought was really cool. So yeah, I think there's definitely that sense that it sort of maps onto what I'm doing now in that sense. So that's really cool.
Definitely.
Yeah.
We speak about this a lot on the podcast, but American Girl really shared like a young girl's role in throughout history and during historic events. And it was a perspective that we didn't often hear in school. Like, where were the girls? Where were the women? So I'm so excited to dive in further. But were there any stories that like particularly surprised you about the first ladies and maybe their roles within politics or in the White House or?
Well, I can tell you guys a little bit about a story I'm working on now that it should actually be published by the time this airs, but it's about Mary Todd Lincoln and her interest in like spiritualism and seances. So she had, before her husband was assassinated next to her, she literally had already lost, I think, two of her four sons and then later three of her four sons. So she was just like a woman who had like devastating loss in her life. And she had this very like deep interest in, you know, this sort of movement sweeping the country called spiritualism, where people thought that they could talk to the dead. And she had actually up to eight seances in the White House, which is kind of crazy to think about. And it's interesting because there's a lot of research that ties in spiritualism to the women's suffrage movement. And it was just kind of a way for a lot of these like famous mediums, that a lot of whom were speaking with Mary Todd Lincoln, were sort of able to have businesses and travel the country and sort of have prominent voices about, you know, society at a time when that was not allowed. So yeah, it's been fascinating to dive in.
That sounds so cool. I feel like I was listening to a podcast that touched on the topic. It was specifically talking about the topic of like spiritualism and seances. And I feel like they mentioned Mary Todd Lincoln. They also mentioned Harry Houdini's wife as just part of the greater like overarching narrative of like notable people who engaged with that. And it's so interesting. I can't wait to read more about it in your story.
Definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm hoping your subscribers would be interested in checking it out.
For sure. I feel like it's like American Girl characters that are real, but
Kind of,
more
yeah.
adult centered.
Yeah, right.
For sure, for sure.
Wow, that's so interesting. I'm so excited that you are sharing those stories and bringing those to light. I'm really excited to dive in.
Yeah, it's been a cool sort of interesting journey. That really, it's my colleague Jen Taylor has just been doing, she's been doing such an incredible job. So kudos, like hats off to her. She's doing awesome. I'm like definitely writing, you know, where I can and helping, but like it's her
Yeah.
project and she's doing such a great job with it. I'm super proud of her.
Incredible.
I have a question about you know, you mentioned that you eventually went into nonfiction writing for a couple of different reasons, but do you think that you would ever venture back into fiction territory?
Yeah, I do. Thanks for asking that. It's sort of been bubbling up recently in my brain as something I would potentially do. And it's funny because I actually just saw on Twitter today my good friend Julia Dahl, who is she works with me at CBS News, and she's now actually a murder mystery writer. And yeah, she's awesome. And she wrote that she's holding classes for either journalists who want to become fiction writers, or the other way around, fiction writers who want to become journalists, because she sort of had her foot in both worlds, and she's also a teacher. So yeah, like I don't know where I would start. I guess it's a little bit overwhelming to think about where I would start, like how I would make money, you know, et cetera. But there's definitely a part of me that's like kind of tugging at me, like to do that again. And I've started to like dip my toe into it a little bit. So definitely something I'm interested in exploring further.
Oh, that's so exciting. I love that. I think, it's just kind of like a full circle moment back to the story that won
Right.
the contest. So that's so cool. I love
Yeah. And
that.
it helps definitely to have encouragement from, people like you guys and your subscribers that, I think when you're a writer, you often don't have a lot of feedback on your stuff. So when you get feedback, it's super amazing to have and like very encouraging. So yes, thank you guys. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Oh my goodness. Well, I mean, if you venture back into the spooky territory, we will
Yes.
be loving it.
Yeah, wherever I go, it will probably be spooky. I just don't see how it could not be. I'm just too interested in that
Oh my God.
Politica.
I love
That
that. Erin, this has been so wonderful to connect with you, to hear about your journey as a writer, especially starting off with your first byline in American Girl magazine. And something that we like to ask all of our guests who join us on the podcast is, what lasting impression did American Girl leave on you?
Yeah, I mean, I think the big one was just confidence and being given sort of a platform at like that level of platform at such a young age definitely had a huge impact on, thinking that my work was important and that it mattered. So that was huge. But I think also, just it felt very much like it encouraged me to sort of like push my boundaries, and even in very little ways, like, hey, did you think about trying this for your Halloween party? Or, did you think about beekeeping or whatever hobby? I mean, I think it opened my mind to sort of living in a way that you could sort of gravitate towards the things that interested you most, rather than sort of staying in sort of a box. And I think that is an important skill to have early on, an important, skill to have instilled in you or reinforced to you at a young age, because it can be very easy to get like boxed in by society and like have, by whoever, have by society, by your parents, by your friends, whatever, to like be told, who you are and be told what you should do. And you kind of have to like learn to actively push back against that to sort of live in sort of an independent way that sort of aligns with your like natural skills and talents and like your likes and the things that you love to do. So yeah, I think that really is like a skill that you have to kind of learn. So I know for me that American Girl really drove that home, and I get the sense that it did for like a lot of other girls as well. So I hope that had an effect on a good effect on our generation. I think it really did.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, the magazine was just, and I feel like, a lot of the times on this podcast we like lead with like a like doll approach, but the magazine like impact cannot be understated with
For sure.
the amount of storytelling that was being done, and also the amount of storytelling that they were allowing their contributors to do. And
Absolutely.
I agree that I think like it just instilled like a sense of confidence to, number one, like have yourself represented in a publication like that that was geared towards young girls, but also to be able to even contribute in some ways to that publication is huge. And I don't know what today's equivalent is, but I hope that there is something that makes young girls feel that way today,
Yeah.
whether it's an Instagram or, even like or like journaling or something like that, helps like build those feelings of confidence you're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think even just a little, like a little bit can go a long way at that age too.
Totally.
Yeah, like having that possibility be open, I
Definitely.
think it is just so impactful to see the different ways that girls around the country are participating in different hobbies and yeah, really having that confidence built. It seemed like the world was ours.
Yeah, absolutely. And I definitely don't like, I would get that message certainly from my parents, like, you can do whatever you want, you can do whatever a boy can do, blah, blah, blah. But I don't remember any
Yeah.
other like publication that was I was getting that message from.
Well, Erin, if you were an American Girl character and you had a doll created in your likeness, what three accessories would this
Ooh.
doll come with?
Wow, this is an amazing question. I can't say like iPhone or whatever. Like I probably that's like the one thing I'm like attached to all
You
time.
can let you,
I
but you're
mean, that's a given. Let's
I
say
know, right?
all dolls come with the iPhone.
But like I guess, well, let's see. Okay, so car, definitely a car.
Love it.
I love my car. I had it even when I was in the city in Brooklyn and Bay Ridge, which is like the worst parking neighborhood ever. And I was like driving around the block for hours looking for parking. I don't care. I need my car. Like
Love
we love
that.
it.
And now they offer like cars for dolls, like with the modern
Yeah. Oh,
dolls.
yeah. I saw like somebody, well, it was for his cat, but I saw somebody on Instagram getting his cat like a little Tesla or something like that. I don't know if I'd
My
go that
God.
far, but
That's so funny.
oh my gosh, I'm trying to think what else. I guess, you know, like a pen or notebook or something, like something, you know, that's kind of lame, but you know, it's something that would indicate
Yeah.
that I'm a writer. And
Love
then
it.
headphones, because I listen to music all the time.
I
I love
Yeah,
that.
that's it. Do you guys get to answer that question too?
Oh, we can for the
No, you don't have
first t for the
to.
first time. I'm
I'm just curious.
I'm shook by how good this question is, Lindsay.
That's a
We have
great
to,
question.
I
Write it down.
know, we have to like bring this into the rotation. I
Yeah.
think one of my primary accessories would be my dog.
Okay.
And then I think I would have like a cup of like iced coffee.
Nice.
And then maybe like a little purse. I've always like been like a little purse girl, even when I was a kid. So I feel like those are my main three.
Followed, yeah.
Oh, I love
Love
that. All right, I'll go with a podcast microphone.
that. Cute, Lindsay.
that's number one. I'm gonna do taper candles as my second because I love to set the mood. And the third accessory. Oh my goodness, this is actually hard, and I didn't give this any thought before.
A
Maybe,
headband.
yeah, a headband. That's perfect. I'm not
Perfect.
wearing a headband at this moment, but I often am, so that is perfect.
Love that. Love that. I feel like I want a fourth though, because now that you mentioned your dog, I feel like I need my cat too.
Totally. Pets have to be included. I think that it would be great if my dog was represented as an accessory. He would be so cute.
Oh, what kind of dog is he?
He's like a little Chihuahua mix. So, you know, very fun for little girls to play with if American Girl wants to make an accessory of my dog at some point. They do actually have a Chihuahua, and I'm like, maybe I would get that for myself just to have. But obviously you are a contributor to American Girl magazine famously, but if you could have contributed to any other section, and you know, there are so many good sections in the magazine. There's the help section, there's the paper doll section, there's the like who's that girl section where it's like a famous person and you have to like guess who they are by their childhood photos. Is there a section that you feel like you would have liked to contribute to besides your story?
I would say it's probably a toss-up between the help section and the paper dolls. I always thought the paper dolls were just so cool, and I just sort of personally feel really connected to both my grandmas when they were still alive, and just you know, like to have that sort of representation of genealogy is like awesome. I'm not like a super into genealogy, but for whatever reason, I think the combination of the paper dolls, because I had a bunch of other paper dolls, like I was for a while there, I was like legit into paper dolls. And then the help section, just because I think also like I would probably be more interested in like responding to the advice rather than like asking for advice, but like it's just kind of a cool way to offer my take on whatever people's problems are. And you know, I'm often kind of like tend to be an advice giver type of person, so I think it would be interesting to go that route. Yeah.
Absolutely. The help section was my favorite section of the
Yeah, it was great.
magazine. I was a little bit judgmental though. I'd be like, this person needs to get their shit together. Like what are they doing?
Oh my
But
God.
I always admired the way that the prompts were answered because they were very
Yes.
non-judgmental, but also very clear about sort of keeping like a moral compass to the problems without being like,
Right.
you have to do this or shaming anybody. So
Definitely.
I would love a help like that in like a current magazine for my adult
Absolutely.
problems,
I
but
would love that. And I love that they took the problem so seriously too, even though these were problems that 11, 12-year-old girls had, so they weren't, some of them were
right.
a little on the trivial side, but they
Right.
never treated it that way. They were always like, this is important, and it can be hard to be in this situation when you're that age, and dealing with friends can be hard, and dealing with parents can be hard. And it was almost like they were trying to be like empathetic to like your plight or whatever, and like sort of make it a little bit more broad, like this can be something that if to make you feel like you weren't alone, like this can be something that affects all sorts of other girls that are your age too, which I thought was really cool.
Definitely. And the advice, like, it was so measured and really holds up today. Like, I've read like a lot of like publications from like the 1960s or like advice columns from like, I don't know, 50 years ago. And like the advice is just like all over the place. Like, this is actually like smart, like stood the test of time
Yeah,
advice.
definitely, definitely.
It's really
Right.
impressive.
It is impressive, and I really wish something like that was still around. Just speaking of the magazine in general, yeah.
Right? Likewise. Likewise. I
Totally.
know we hear that a lot from like our followers being like, can someone just like make an American Girl magazine for like adults already? Like,
Yes,
we're
totally.
willing to
Truly.
take that on one day, maybe.
No.
I know. Well,
Truly.
Erin, this has been such a joy to have you on our podcast today. Thank you so much for taking the time to connect with us and share more about your experience. It's just been such a joy to chat with you.
Oh my gosh, it's been so fun. Amazing to just go through this really pivotal part of my childhood with you guys. And just thank you so much for the interest. And I'm so like honored to know that this story resonated with so many people.
It truly did. Now, where could everyone find you after this?
I would definitely encourage people to check out East Wing Magazine. And if you want to subscribe, you can do that too. You can just go to eastwingmagazine.com.
We will do it.
Amazing. We will
Yay.
absolutely do it. And we will post also where our followers can do it if they would like to subscribe. But Erin, thank you so much for coming on and chatting with us. And everyone, thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.
And now, here is The Ghost Who Became a Girl by Erin Donahue, read by Rebecca Reimer from her YouTube channel at RebeccaJ82, which we'll link in the show notes. Enjoy!
Jamie had warned her a thousand times, but she never listened. Lydia turned onto the winding forest trail that led to Dead Man's Creek. She recalled the fight she had just had with her older brother Jamie. He didn't like Lydia going to the creek. He believed it was haunted by the ghost of a girl who had fallen into the creek and perished over 100 years before. Along with the rest of the town, Lydia thought sullenly. Ever since Lydia's first glimpse of the creek 3 years earlier, she had felt almost a force urging her to come. It was her own private place. Jamie warned her to stay away, but she never listened. Lydia was a pretty girl, with thick raven hair that hung down her back in curls. She had a small red mouth and green eyes outlined by long black lashes. Her nose was short and stubby, which she hated. Lydia was shorter than everyone else her age, about 4 feet 10 inches. Lydia reached the creek. She sat on a moss-covered rock and watched the churning water below her. The birds twittered softly, and chipmunks and squirrels scampered up the trees. Lydia was instantly trapped by the magic and mystery of the creek. Sometimes she would sit like this for hours. Lydia didn't think Dead Man's Creek was a suitable name for such a beautiful place. Why, the creek was one of the most lively places she had ever seen. Lydia knew the name came from the legends about a ghost. She continued to stare into the deep water. Suddenly, Lydia heard a plunk in the water. She turned to see a girl, about 9, skipping stones in the creek. The girl was about 11 yards away from Lydia. She had thick blonde hair pulled back into 2 braids that hung just above her shoulders, round cheeks, and blue eyes. The girl was wearing a blue cotton sundress. She also turned. When she saw Lydia, she vanished. Lydia reasoned that the girl had been frightened and had run away so quickly that it only seemed that she had vanished. Satisfied, Lydia relaxed and continued her daydreaming. Lydia was reluctant to leave when the sun began to set, but she wasn't allowed out after dark. She stood and began to walk the half mile home. It was the next day. The sun was shining. The birds were singing, and Lydia was in high spirits. What a perfect day to go to the creek. Lydia ran all the way through the woods to the creek. The creek seemed even more beautiful than usual that day. What little light managed to get through the dense canopy of trees above Lydia's head sparkled on the crystal water, making it shine and glimmer. To Lydia, the creek was like a real person with emotions and feelings. Today it was bursting with energy. Lydia felt the same way. She noticed something blue high up in a tree across the street. Why, it was the girl she had seen the day before, and she was wearing the same blue cotton sundress. The girl was sitting on a sturdy tree limb, staring into the rushing water. "Hi, hello there," Lydia called up to her over the roar of the water. The girl glanced back down by her. By the expression on her face, she was clearly startled. "My name is Lydia. Who are you?" Lydia didn't have a chance to say anything more. The girl vanished. Lydia's curiosity overwhelmed her. She crossed the small log bridge to the other side of the creek and went to the tree the girl had been sitting on. There were no footprints in the mud. Lydia was confused, but she didn't see the girl anymore that day. That night, Lydia had a dream. The girl was in Dead Man's Creek, and the current was carrying her downstream. The girl was struggling to keep her head above the water. Her arms were outstretched as if reaching for something. Lydia was sitting on the moss-covered rock, but for some reason, she could not help the girl. "Help me," the girl cried. She stretched out her arms toward Lydia. "Help me." Her head began to sink below the water's surface. Just before she went completely under, she screamed, "Lydia, help me." Lydia woke up. Daylight poured through her window. She squinted and rested on her elbows. "That was really weird," she said aloud. "Something is going on at the creek, and it has something to do with that girl. I don't quite understand it yet, but today I'm going to the creek and finding out." After Lydia was dressed and ready, she pulled on her windbreaker and pushed open the front door. "And where do you think you're going, young lady?" Lydia turned to see her mother with her hands on her hips. "Don't tell me. To the creek." "Well, Lydia, I thought you had a history report due on Monday." "Well, I do, but I suggest you go to the library right now to finish it up. If you ask to use the microfilm machine, it might help you with your report." "What's a microfilm machine?" Lydia asked. "It's a machine that has newspapers from long ago. You turn a knob and the newspaper goes by on a screen." "But can I?" "No, Lydia, go to the library." There was no arguing with that. Lydia sighed, grabbed her rusted bicycle, and pedaled to the library. Soon she was sitting before the screen of a microfilm machine, turning the knob and watching the newspaper whiz by. She was looking at the newspaper from May 1874. Then something caught her eye. It was a small article that went like this. "The body of Susan O'Connor of Fort Orchard Road was found today in the creek. She was the daughter of Frederick and Cornelia O'Connor and was their only child. Susan O'Connor was suspected to have fallen into the creek, but how or why it happened has not been found out yet. Funeral services will be held at the cemetery 10 a.m. on Monday. Lydia looked at the picture. Susan had been pretty, with two blonde braids that hung just above her shoulders. She had a small red mouth, round cheeks, and blue eyes. She seemed so familiar. Lydia let out a short scream. Susan O'Connor was the girl she had seen near the creek. Susan was the ghost of Dead Man's Creek. The legends were true. A million things flashed through Lydia's mind at once. The date of the newspaper was May 14. Today was May 14. Today was the anniversary of Susan O'Connor's death. Lydia remembered a movie she had seen about a ghost who appeared to a girl on the anniversary of the ghost's death and reenacted the entire death. The girl saved the ghost and the ghost could rest in peace. Maybe that's what Susan wanted. Maybe that's what Lydia's dream meant. Susan had been asking for help. She could be drowning in the creek right now. If Lydia saved her, then she could rest in peace. But what if it was too late? What if Susan had already drowned in the creek? Lydia left the microfilm machine on and ran out of the library. Then she grabbed her bike and pedaled as fast as she could to the creek, gripping the handlebars so hard that her knuckles turned white. She reached the creek, parked her bike, and jumped off. What if she was too late? But she was not too late. She could hear a soft voice calling, upstream calling for help. As it came downstream, the voice became louder. It was Susan. Relief and nervousness flooded Lydia at the same time. How could she save Susan if she was in the middle of the creek? Lydia carefully stepped onto a small rock in the creek. Then she stepped into another and another, being careful not to slip and fall into the icy water. She reached a big rock in the middle of the creek and squatted down. Then she reached out her arms. Susan was coming downstream with her, arms outstretched like in the dream. "Grab my hands," Lydia called to Susan. She caught Susan by the arms. Suddenly, Susan's face was evil. She smiled wickedly, as if she had completed an evil task, and laughed menacingly. Then, with much more strength one would have expected from a 9-year-old girl, she heaved Lydia into the creek. The icy water swallowed her up. Susan hadn't wanted help at all. She wanted Lydia to die in the creek as she had. Then she could rest in peace. Lydia struggled to get her head above the water, but her feet were trapped. The last thing Lydia saw was the water wavery image of Susan above her in the water. Her eyes flashed an evil red, and she vanished. Then everything went black. No one ever found Lydia in the creek. She perished just as Susan had. The police found Lydia's bike parked at the creek and found the article she had left on the microfilm machine. They knew it was linked to her death, but they didn't know how. Now Lydia, instead of Susan, is the ghost of Dead Man's Creek. There have been reports of passersby claiming to see a pretty young girl with thick raven hair, green eyes, a small red mouth, and a short stub of a nose. About 4 feet 10 inches tall at the creek. Sometimes she is seen sitting on a moss-covered rock. Other times she stands on the log bridge. She is always staring into the water. Perhaps, like Susan, she will pick a young girl as her victim. One who is enchanted with the creek and comes there often. Watch out. It could be you. There's also an author's note here, and it says, "Meet the author, Erin Donahue. My story started with the idea of a ghost that needed help, but really needed to kill. Then I added a creek to set the scene for danger. I threw in a legend for a spooky element. I've always loved writing, and I am overwhelmed at being published." And this was written by 11-year-old Erin Donahue. And at the time, in 1994, when this was published, She lived in Bloomfield, Connecticut. Thanks for watching.
Thank you for listening to American Girl Women. For more AG Women content, follow us on IG at American Girl Women or send us your American Girl stories via AmericanGirlWomen@gmail.com. We might just read them on the pod. If you like this podcast, tell your friends and rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts.